evening. Welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, and tonight I am joined by two lovely ladies here on Valentine's Day. Stacy Lowe from Earth Friendly Supply Company. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, everyone.
And Amber Kleinman, our fellow worm from Oasis Nursery.
Hello.
Hello, Amber. These two ladies are amazing gardeners and amazing cooks. Really good with their food. So that's what we're talking about tonight on this cold winter night. We're talking about eating fresh food and also food that we've preserved from our garden. So how fun is that?
Yeah, now's the time.
Now's the time. And we're thinking about, you know, what we're going to put in the ground because after this storm is over, boy, I can just feel the time start to roll. So
yeah, we went through seeds this weekend.
Oh, did you?
It's time to gear up.
Right.
Start planting.
All right. So we're going to be talking about what you're going to eat next year. 527-486-8866, KVNF now, worm at kvnf.org. A couple weeks ago, we had Katie Goldsberry from Boomberry Farms in here, and we were talking about preserving and tomatoes.
Yes.
And Dave from Montrose, who's our tomato guy down there, he called and shared his tip about hanging his tomato plants late in the season and letting those ripen. And boy, he was taking them all away past the new year into February and March.
Yeah, I believe he said he still had some. He was picking the last of his a couple weeks ago.
So. Yeah. So, Stacy, you had a tip on the type of tomatoes that might work well with that.
Yes. So I was listening to that show, and I knew I was going to be on, so I thought we'd touch on the topic again. So I grew a variety last year from Laura Parker at High Desert Seeds.
Perfect.
And the variety is the Grappoli de Inverno. I believe is how you say it.
I don't have an Italian.
Yeah, there you go.
Without the Italian accent. It's an Italian heirloom, and it's they call it an Italian winter tomato. And traditionally, they hang it and store it through the winter. They're plum size, roughly, tomatoes. And as they hang, the flavor gets more concentrated and sweeter as the months, winter months pass on. And I personally use them to make sauce. I did not hang them. I only grew one plant just to kind of test it and see the flavor and make sauce with it and do kind of a trial. I actually roasted them with garlic because we grow garlic on our farm. Mm-hmm. And I roasted them with garlic. And then I put them in my chinois. I don't know.
What's a chinois?
Do you know what a chinois? A chinois is a cone-shaped sieve with a really fine mesh.
Oh, yeah.
And it has like a wooden pestle device. And so I roast the tomatoes, skin, seeds. I roast them whole and then run them through the chinois. And it makes a beautiful sauce.
They were tasty for that.
Yeah, and it pulls the skins and the seeds off, and then, you know, you just, I throw, the pulp goes in the compost from the seeds and the skin, and then, it makes a beautiful, silky, smooth sauce.
Oh,
and
that sounds delicious.
Yeah, turned out great. I'm definitely growing them again this year.
Mm-hmm. Is a chinois something you use specifically for tomatoes, or are there other?
I use it for a lot of things. I've used it for blackberries when I make a blackberry sauce to get the seeds out of the blackberries. I use it for winter squash. I'll roast squash and run it through that. I also use my potato ricer for squash.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it makes a really silky, smooth puree.
Mm-hmm. Right, getting those seeds out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's good for the farms, too, because it's a very labor-intensive activity.
Right.
So it's actually a workout at the same.
Yeah, way. I enlisted my daughter to help me with the tomatoes. Okay, you do a round, and then I'll do a round.
Right.
You do a round.
Your arm gets tired. I'll jump in.
Yeah, yeah. Do you do tomatoes, Amber?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I do lots of tomatoes. I sometimes will skin them, but I mostly will put them through a
mill.
It's not a ricer, but food mill.
I have a food mill like that as well.
Like a hand crank food mill. It's faster. than a chinois in my experience. And so I just, you know, it's like a pan, it's shaped like a pan, and then it's got this kind of course, there's perforations on the bottom and a center pivot. And so you crank and you're this, there's a plane kind of smooshing the tomatoes through. So you don't have to press them yourself with the pestle. You just turn the crank and it pushes them through. And so it's faster, I find, to push them and get the seeds and the skins off that way.
Yeah, it's kind of like an angled dull blade almost that runs across the, the top of the perforated.
Yeah, it works really well for tomatoes. Yeah, there. I like the Opalca tomatoes or Federale tomatoes.
For sauce.
For sauce. Yeah, they also make a really lovely velvety sauce. They have lots of flesh in the tomato with very few seeds, and they skin super easy. So they're like really made for sauce. Those are two types that I just grow every year just for that.
Yeah.
And are those, what's the size of those tomatoes?
They're long, like 4 inch, and they're pointed.
Oh, no kidding.
Long, skinny, and pointed.
So a Roma
it's
type.
It's a Roma, but like a long, longer type Roma.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you put your sauce up, Stacy?
I freeze my sauce.
You freeze it?
Yeah, I usually pack it in quart-sized bags because we're a family of three, so we don't use a lot at one time. And then, and I just, and I don't make a flavored sauce. Like I said, I roast a little bit of garlic in with the tomatoes just to get that infused flavor. But I will just take the tomato sauce out and make a sauce with it. So like if I want to saute onions and garlic and mushrooms and then add the tomato sauce and cook it down a little bit and then add the pasta.
Yeah, you just have your base.
Yeah, it's a base sauce.
Yeah, and thinking about what size that is for your family, and pulling that out. And Amber, you have a great resource there, Saving the Season, which is kind of the same thinking. You're trying to figure out how to eat it easily. You can put it up, but then let's pull it out and make sure we use it all and eat it.
Yeah, and we all have different, I think, go-to recipes that we like. And so I sometimes I'll freeze tomatoes if I kind of run out of time, but I almost always can it. And I almost always make like the garlic and the onion and make the sauce immediately usable sauce. So you could just open a can and you can dump it, warm it up, and you're like ready to eat.
Right.
And it's good for tomato soup. And then it's also good for sauce. You can use it either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yummy.
And it's super easy because tomatoes are more acidic, so they can be water bath canned. And so they're really like, it doesn't take much time to actually can them.
We're going to talk about that because that's something that can be complicated or sometimes intimidating for people.
But yeah, maybe you don't want to poison yourself.
Right. All right, 970-527-4868-866 KVNF now. And you can email worm@kvnf.org and share what you're doing with your food or ask a question here. So, canning. There's different ways to can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should start with that. I think that's a really good place to start.
So there's two types of canning. There's a boiling water bath canning, and then there's steam pressure canning. And depending on the acidity of your food that you're canning is how you decide which process to use so that it properly kills any pathogens that might be in that food that could make you sick if you don't get it to the proper temperature. So high acidity foods are foods that have a 4.6 pH or lower, and that would be several fruits, but you know, pretty much any pickling recipe is going to be high acidity.
Yeah, because you're adding vinegar to it, which is very acidic.
Yeah, and so it's important to use a 5% acidity vinegar if you're pickling. And then also you can add citric acid or bottled lemon juice to get your acidity to that 5%.
And it also helps with the color.
Yes.
That's the vitamin C preserves the color so things don't get like funky
brownie
color.
right.
Yeah, and because there are certain vegetables that will turn a funky color and they don't look that appetizing
They taste the same.
Yeah, they taste the same.
You're looking at that jar on the shelf thinking, yeah, I don't know.
Well, a good example would be peaches.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
If you don't add that citric acid or some lemon juice, they kind of
like
turn brown.
Right away mm-hmm. when you're processing, when you like pull the skins and slice them, you put them right into a bath with citric acid.
Yeah, so they immediately, and that's oxidation is what that's called. So yeah, it's they immediately start to turn brown and lose their appetizing.
So
look.
Is that when we're going to pressure cook?
Or no, okay. Boiling water. Yeah, the boiling water, the high acidity foods you can process with a boiling water bath. And I have a list of some of the foods that are included in that, and that's pickles, apricots, plums, apples, blackberry, sour cherry, peaches, pears, tomatoes, and sauerkraut.
Wow, that's a lot for.
Yeah, and then low acidity foods, anything that's above 4.6 pH. Requires that the food be processed at a temperature well above boiling point for an extended period of time. And really the only way to accomplish that is through pressure cooking.
Right.
And so things like okra, carrots, unless you're pickling the okra.
Right.
And you're adding that vinegar. But if you're just canning food without pickling it, the okra, carrots, green beans, beets, turnips, peas, and corn are some of the more common ones that you would have to use pressure canning.
All right. So once you figure out the difference there, you know what your method is going to be. Is one easier than the other?
Not really. I find that the difficult part is the filling the jars and cleaning the tops and putting the caps on and keeping everything at the right temperature before you put.
It's just a process.
Yeah. And I also find that it's helpful to have a second person too.
Yes.
I mean, I make a point to try to bring my mom for a visit during canning time because it definitely is much easier when you have two people. It's kind of like an assembly line type setup. So. And then the altitude, we discussed adjusting time, processing time for altitude. Mm-hmm. And Amber looked it up, and from 1 to 3,000 feet in elevation, you increase it by 5 minutes, 3 to 6,000 increase by 10 minutes, and 6 to 8,000 feet increase by 15 minutes. And that's on top of the recommended processing time.
So on top of your boiling water bath or on top of your pressure cooking time.
You add, yeah.
Yeah, you add that
more time. Mm-hmm. Most recipes are made for low altitudes is what you're...
Yeah, so I have several canning books.
Yeah.
What kind of canning book do you use, Amber?
I mean, I have several, but they all say this in the beginning. Because I think most recipes are just start with zero altitude. So if you are at altitude, you just add 10 minutes on every time.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. You just have to know to do it.
Right.
And the most important thing is after you've processed... You know, all of your lids have to ping, is what they say. And the top of the jar lid goes down. And then that tells you that you have a good seal and it's been processed.
And do you get that seal from putting it on when it's the right temperature, or what causes that?
Cooling it.
Cooling. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the lids are a two-piece lid. You've probably seen them. And so when it heats up, it lets out a little bit of the air. So you want to leave an airspace, and most recipes will tell you how much the airspace is. And so you don't push food, you don't fill it all the way at the top, because you'll just push food out, and then that'll cause the seal not to work. Mm-hmm. So you always leave at least a half an inch. Mm-hmm. It's better to be a little lower than a little higher.
Right.
And then as it cools, it sucks that lid down, and you get a nice seal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So does the canning give you a longer, or what is the shelf life when you can? Seems like that's, to me, it's like, okay, I'm going to stock up my basement shelves down there.
Yeah.
Well, you said it, I didn't.
I feel like I try to go through things in 3 years.
Okay, that's a nice range of time.
Yeah. People will say, oh, 2 years. But I know people that have eaten like 5 to 7 year old canning. It's been fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I trust your nose.
Totally.
Is what I say. Right. I mean, totally. I don't just automatically toss things after, you know, I have some things that are 4 years that I would pop them open and give them a smell. And
if you have a seal, if the seal's good, when you open it, you know, you'll hear it. And then you'll know that it's still sealed. It's probably fine.
And no rust around the... Yeah. Well, and I take my bands off before storing. So you put the bands on to process it, to hold the lids in place. And then I take my bands off after they've sealed and finished processing. And that's how I store them. And so...
You just have to pop
that
thing.
Yep, and you just pop the sealed cap off.
Yeah, that's a nice long period to be able to store some food and then just rotate the new stuff in.
Yeah, and I mean, but I would say probably 3 years is, I mean, we usually move through our stuff within 3 years.
Yeah.
But talking about the lids reminds me, you, Amber, use the reusable ones at one point.
Let's talk
about that, because that was fascinating to me at the time, and I never did try them.
They had them for sale at Farm and Home, actually, and is it Clabber? They have a weird name that doesn't even remind me of canning. But they are a plastic top with a red silicone seal, and you put them on with the band, the metal band that you normally would have. And what I learned about those is that they are good for about a year. So I don't use them on, I wouldn't use them on everything. I use them on things that I know we're going to eat right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, during 2020, I was so glad I had those because you couldn't find canning lids at all.
Oh, really?
And so I had a stack of these and I used them and they work fine, but I feel like after a year, some of them lost their seal.
Okay.
So I just wouldn't store them for long term.
Mm-hmm. Wonder if that's the dryness here, do you think? Or
I think they're just rubber? Not, they don't have a gooiness. So the glue around the edge of that canning jar lid is some kind of proprietary special blend.
Oh, yeah.
And it is sticky, and it's almost a gelish kind of material once it melts. This is a silicone, a harder material.
Right.
So I just think they're just different materials.
Right.
They last different amounts of time.
Do you then, when you've got this long shelf life of 3 years, do you plan your garden differently each year, knowing that, okay, I've got my stack of tomatoes or my jars of tomatoes here. I think I'm good this year. I'm going to grow something different. Or do you plan that way? Or do you?
Yeah, I have. When I fall in love with a recipe, I plant for a recipe. And then you have this your yearly stuff that you know you're going to use, like, you know, your tomato sauces and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, once you find one, you're like, ooh, I'm going to make that every year.
Mm-hmm.
You just plan to have it.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is a hot and sweet pickled pepper mix.
Ooh,
and
yummy.
So some years we'll have a bumper crop of peppers and we'll can a bunch. And then the next year we're still sitting on a bunch of pickled peppers. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, maybe we should back off on growing those peppers and just grow the ones we're going to eat fresh or that we're going to dice up and put in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
We grow a lot of onions and peppers and we dice it up in like par cook it and then freeze it and put them in bags. And so when I want to make soup or stir fry or whatever, I just take a scoop of peppers and onions out and it's just like right out of our garden.
Yummy. How do you pickle your peppers? Can you share that?
Oh, yeah. It's really simple. It's a vinegar and sugar. And sometimes I'll do like an herb or oregano or something like that. Just depends on what's fresh in the garden. But I usually do a variety of hot peppers and sweet peppers. I've tried many different varieties over the years. We love to grow peppers. One of my favorite Hungarian wax, that's one that's kind of like in the middle. It can be hot, but it can be mild as well. We like to pickle those. And lots of varieties of peppers from Laura at High Desert.
High Desert Seed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For the sweet peppers. Really, the Serenevi pepper and the Chervena Chushka, those are both really good. The sweet peppers, they're just out of this world. And they're so, they're thick-walled and crisp and juicy. Mm-hmm. And some of the best sweet peppers. And they do great for pickling.
Yeah, I love seeing peppers in the garden and the different colors and the smell that comes off of it too.
Yeah,
there's so many colors of peppers and varieties.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And jalapenos, of course. We pickle jalapeno rings just to have on hand all the time. And that's the recipe you had, right?
Absolutely.
Jalapenos.
Yeah, I did bring it. I'm going to share it really quick.
Yeah, because that's when I fell in love with Amber.
Yeah. There's a warning on this that says just make more because everyone will ask you for it. And I grow a lot of jalapeno plants because you have to have 3 pounds of jalapenos to do this recipe. And it's called candied jalapenos. So it is sweet. And you do have sugar in here, a lot of sugar, but it's 3 pounds of jalapenos, 2 cups of cider vinegar, 6 cups of sugar, and then 1/2 teaspoon of turmeric, 1/2 teaspoon of celery seed, 3 teaspoons granulated garlic, and 1 teaspoon of cayenne. Like you need more heat, but maybe. And so it's simple. You just bring it to a boil and simmer it, and then you pull out the slices and you put them in the jars. And then you simmer the sauce a little more to reduce it, and then you pour it over the sliced jalapenos and you process it. Mm-hmm. And you have to wait 2 weeks to eat it at least, because they look all shriveled in there. And then after 2 weeks, they kind of plump up and then they're ready.
Ooh, nice.
And the cool thing about it, they're not that hot. Once they're processed, they're kind of sweet. But the syrup in there is like, you can use it in cocktails or you can pour it over, whatever, brie or nice, like it is a hot, spicy syrup.
Ooh, so yummy.
You get two
flavors
things
in one. Yeah, those are lovely.
Yeah.
What's that warning again?
Yeah.
Yeah, pepper jelly. That's another one that.
Yeah. I went through a bout of doing that. Yes.
My favorite was the peach pepper. It was like a peach color, but it also had like a hint of peach flavor. And it was one of those pepper plants where you could get a hot one and you can get a mild one. And you just never knew what you were going to get. So it was great for chopping up and making a pepper jelly with.
So the key to the pepper jelly though, and I've learned this, is you have to use the gel pectin. If you use regular pectin, it may or may not set and you may get just like watery jelly. Mm-hmm. Something about the, capsicum or whatever, the heat element in peppers.
Right.
It doesn't always get to be a thick jelly unless you use the gel pectin packets.
All right.
Yeah.
Use the pectin.
Yes.
Gel.
Gel pectin, not just gel powdered.
Pectin.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, peppers. Can't have enough of them.
Can't have enough.
And the pepper jelly is really versatile too. Like, what I like to pour it over Chev and eat it with crackers, and it's a good condiment to like
sandwiches.
Pork tenderloin or a sandwich.
Yeah. Glazing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's really good.
Kind of like your extra sauce in the jar. 527-486-8866 KVNF now. Let's talk a little bit about fresh winter greens and you can sprout right now that you can.
Yeah, so we were discussing before the show a great way to get your vitamin-rich and micronutrient-rich foods during the winter, if you don't have a greenhouse or a large space where you can grow, is to grow sprouts, bean sprouts or sprouted grains or sprouted beans. Process of germination produces vitamin C, and so you get a lot of nutrients, nutritional value from a sprouted grain or a sprouted seed, than you would from just a full vegetable or a fruit.
Or just eating the seed alone.
Yeah, like or eating the seed alone.
Some kind of magic happens where the seed creates its own
nutrients. The germination produces the vitamin C, and it changes the composition of the grain or the seed and increases vitamin B content. And it also neutralizes an acid that inhibits absorption of things like calcium and magnesium and iron and copper and zinc and all those good nutrients that you would get from your food. Mm-hmm. It kind of inhibits that acid that keeps you from being able to absorb
nice.
Those things.
Those sprouts, I've never really thought about that.
I mean, especially in winter, and I picked up actually some radish sprouts from Earth Friendly that are my favorite because, first of all, they're gorgeous.
The China Red,
I think.
I think that's what they're called. Yeah. They're so good.
And it's just so simple. I have a quart jar, and I have a little lid, and the lid kind of has little feet so that it doesn't, the screen isn't sitting in water.
So it's vented.
So it's vented, yeah. So you soak them overnight, and then every day you wash them and dump them and just put them upside down, let them drain. In the morning, wash them again. And like within, I don't know, 4 days, you can start eating them. Mm-hmm. And then they continue to grow and fill up that jar until you get to the bottom of it.
And then you just rinse them and put the lid on and put them in the refrigerator and eat on them. And just rinse them every couple of days if you don't eat them faster
Sprout
than
garden.
That.
So simple.
Yeah.
And we actually sell a sprouter too. I mean, the jar, I use a jar for mung bean sprouts. But yeah, it's a sprouter that's divided. You know, it's two levels and it's divided. So you can do four different types of sprouts at one time in one unit.
And
just rinse it and drain it. And
nice.
Yeah.
Easy to do.
It's really easy way
really
to get
easy.
Really good nutrition during the winter.
I love that.
Yeah. And there seems to be a dearth around here where you can't quite get freshly grown salad greens, like in January. And so that's really the go-to.
That
time of year.
It's limited for sure.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to check in with Sue, who's on the line. She's got a jalapeno idea.
Oh, nice.
Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm so glad to hear you guys. I happen to be off tonight, and I was like, yay. My little sister, Ellen, makes the best jalapeno jelly, Ellie's jellies. But anyway, she had given me some, and I was like, oh, what am I going to do? You know, the cream cheese and the shove and all that. But I put some on a peanut butter sandwich the other day, and it was that pie kind of, like, you know, jalapeno and pie, you know, peanut butter thing. It's amazing.
Wow.
Amazing.
That's adventuresome.
That's
I've
a new
never done that.
PJ
It's
sandwich.
Really good. So that was my tip for the day. And we had for dinner tonight spinach from the Ridgeway Community Garden that I had frozen, and I'm ready for spring. There you go.
Nice. Right on. All right.
So thanks,
Sue.
Guys.
Thanks for checking in with us. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Good to hear
Bye-bye.
From you.
That's a new one to me.
Spicy PB&J.
Yeah. Right.
Have to try it.
Not your kids, PB&J.
Yeah.
All right. Ladies, such a pleasure to have you here and talking about food. I mean, it's the other side of the garden, and that's why we all grow it, right?
You could just go on and on.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing your food.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, anytime.
All right. That's going to do it for us. It is How on Earth coming up next, and then One Woman's Perspective at 7 o'clock. Thanks for listening to As the Worm Turns. KVNF.
Cute vest pocket Mazda, which you can make both slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to or who you're rocking.